I think certainly from our own experience, if you go into government, some of it will definitely go. Some of that support will go. Quite a lot of it will go. And I suppose the question is it worth it then to, you know, you have your 5 years where you're able to do something and potentially after those 5 years lose some or all of your support? My own view is that I entered politics to make change. I didn't enter politics just to give out. I didn't enter politics, I suppose, to be self-indulgent and say the world is terrible and, you know, there is this utopia and that is it's all or nothing. I believe politics is a process of incremental change. We are still a small party, even a surging party, but still a small party. And until the day comes where we get 50% of the votes, we're not going to get 100% of what we want implemented. Now, when I look at what happened with ourselves in government, you know, I could write a book on the mistakes that we made, and I'm happy to, you know, if anyone's ever facing the realistic prospect of being in government or, you know, a confidence and supply sort of situation, you know, we can definitely tell lessons that can be learned from the mistakes made in our situation. But I do think that when you look at the scale of problems facing our planet, facing our societies, we have to be prepared to take that risk. If we feel that what we can achieve is worth it, but you have to be prepared to take the risk. And if the risk is your seats, if the risk is, you know, not being seen as popular when you know prior to the election you were, I think those are risks worth taking if you can actually be sure that you can make some tangible changes to politics in your country.
Provocatively, the word radical got me going. And we got to understand that radical means getting to the root cause of something in its Latin word. And that's why Greens, I think, and this is the question to the panel, is that my reading of the Green surge across these islands is that we're finally getting to economics. And that common across all the parties seems to be that we're getting to the root cause of this climate-changing, inequality-producing, homophobic-producing system that we're now in. And the root of that, or at least part of the root, being that we need to get to the cause of it, not simply the effects of it, is capitalism. Is capitalism. This is a word we've not mentioned today. And certainly for me, we are beginning to see the resurgence of people interested in things like finance. I mean, we have a motion coming up later on around something that myself, and I've been involved in radical politics, in the sense I've just described, for a very long time, we completely missed out on how the money system works. We have effectively privatized the creation of money that actually inbuilds a growth dynamic which is simply unsustainable. There's nothing about inequality. But I just wish to ask the panelists, is this issue of political economy? We're now getting to a situation where we're really getting to the root causes, and that's where we're going to get a lot of resistance. Because even the words I've just said there, capitalism, anti-capitalism, the media out there will laugh. Oh, my God, this is the politics of the playpen. Radical left, you know, finger-pointing. It isn't. It is about we have to address something we haven't addressed before for a very long time in politics, that actually we're proposing a radical economic agenda that has to move us away from endless economic growth, has to challenge a culture of consumption. And that is a very, very difficult sell to do. But if not us, who? What if we are the people we're waiting for? Thank you.
I mean, I think John's right, but the reality is that the system can't go on. So I think that actually, rather than us seeing as, you know, we're in a position of opposition, we are in a position of talking common sense, because we're not talking about a, you know, fantastical future and we're making this stuff up. People are beginning to see that we are in a very finite world, and we've seen from, you know, the riots from young people in Frankfurt this week, again, you know, violent rioting against anti-austerity. It's young people in this generation that are beginning to see the effects and pay the price of capitalism and of a neoliberal economic agenda. And people are beginning to now stand up and want to make a difference in that. And because if we don't, it is the same situation. If not us, then who? We won't have a society or a planet left to actually take forward and to live on. And that is the reality. And people are beginning to see that. But the challenge is obviously we have a media and a populist view that is being fed a very different story. And it's about how we respond to that and connect to people in a real world way and show people that there is a way that we can make a difference and that we can make a difference through political system and through engaging in politics rather than engaging with the narrative of the kind of Russell Brands of this world that are telling us that we shouldn't engage in the political system and that we shouldn't vote. So I think actually it's important that we see ourselves as that force connecting people in, but in a way that actually speaks to them, which I think has been astounding today, and that's what we've seen, is that we're all passionate about a politics that connects to people as people, not as voters. Because we're here fighting for change on a basis of values, because it is what we believe in and it's what we know is true and right. And I think when we speak on those terms, that's when people connect with us, because people want to see a different kind of politics and they want to see themselves reflected in politics. And the more that we connect people in that way and we bring on new members and we have people speaking on panels and speaking on the telly that actually are just ordinary folk and they're women and they're young people and they're working people, then people begin to connect us in a way that they've not before. And I think that it's really important that we move forward in that respect as well. And with that we have to keep continuing to challenge ourselves and ask us questions of what is our role and what are we here to do and who are we here to serve, because we are a political party and it is, you know, we can all get caught up in the kind of game of politics and the glory that comes with that and the hunger for power. And quite quickly, obviously, the more that you get in and sucked into the game of it, then it is very alluring to then be part of that game and think about a wee bit more, and then we're close to government. And then, you know, it's actually thinking about what is our role. And as Ross said earlier, maybe we're best placed as the mosquito. I mean, I don't know, but I think it's important to ask ourselves these questions rather than just assume that we are just going after a certain movement that means that we want to get into government to fulfill a certain role, which might mean that we look back and think, actually, did we achieve what we set out to? And if not, then why not? So I think it's important actually not to be thinking about these questions in the future, but to challenge ourselves to think about these questions now and to think about how we stay connected to those values, but importantly, how we use that to stay connected to people, because obviously that's what we're all about, is making sure that we're connecting people into a different kind of politics that works for them.
Can I just add on the back of that one as well, and another point to your question there, John, when you... John to the right. When you're thinking about getting into government or watching another political party or a politician or whoever adopt our ideas, I think that's still a win-win, you know, because we're there to create the ideas, we're there to create something new, and we're there to change the conversation, and our ideas are not the established ideas, we have something else to offer. So if we see that being adopted on the wider agenda, then that's still a win for us, and that's grand. If we get the opportunity to have a majority-led government, oh man. That would be phenomenal. But again, you know, it's not the be-all, it's not the end, it's just keep going. You know, if you lose it again, that's okay, you know, that's what's called democracy, and allow the people to lead, but our voices should never change.
Hello everybody.
So I'm just quickly on what John was saying. I think there's a kind of the brief version of what I was trying to get across at the beginning, in a sense, is there is patiently a crisis of capitalism, and people are clever enough to see that. They can see that the economic system, the political system that we live under, is in real serious crisis mode, and it might have been gone through a kind of slight cover-up of that crisis over the last few years, but none of the things causing it have been resolved, and people understand that, and they're looking for political parties which can explain that and talk about a sensible path out of it. And that's why the party has surged, because we've started to look like that party offering a path out of a disastrous and failing capitalist system.
The coffee pots are on their way, but I think we can squeeze in one.
Hello, everybody.
Four quick questions then.
Hello, everybody. I'm from Ballyhinton, County Down. The farmers in County Down don't know where our company are going because we had a farmer meeting in the Middlebrook in Ballyhinton last week, and the farmers that came, all the Dard representatives were there. When they were asked a question, the Dard representatives weren't able to give them a proper answer. But what's happened at the minute, young farmers under 30 have to go to Greenmount to get a certificate so they can farm at home, and the older men have to go to Ballyhinton for a night and a week to get more experience in farming, and they were in real uproar. But the money that's coming from Dard at the minute, it's a big amount of money. And the area in the Moor and Down area, there's £11 million coming. So the farmers don't know where they're going to get assistance with their farms to build sheds to look after animals and all everything else. What is the Green Party about looking at? Because when I go home today, they'll be asking me, what's the Green Party going to do with farms? Oh, are they interested in it at all?
Pat, I think you should be having a wee word with Tiziana up here. Well, I don't think we can hold the Green Party across the British Isles responsible for our agricultural policy, but perhaps if you have a brief...
I'm a farmer's son. I'm a farmer's son, so it's not anymore, but my dad was a shepherd for years and they still live on a farm, so it's very much of interest to me. I mean, my answer to farmers all across, you know, the UK and in fact Europe is that they're being massively squeezed by the same system as squeezing everyone else. You know, we hugely undervalue the production of food. The food supply is controlled by a tiny number of massive monopolies who are squeezing producers as hard as they possibly can. And while, you know, Greens and farmers have some things that we disagree on for reasons that we shouldn't be dishonest about, you know, that to do with often the way the land is managed in the short term, the long-term interests of farmers are in overthrowing an economic system which is squeezing them as hard as it's squeezing everyone else. And it's only the Greens who are going to even talk about that.
Thank you. I'm Malik O'Hara, interim secretary of newly established North and West Belfast Greens. So, hey, yo. Just my question. I suppose it's primarily for Zara and Adam, and it's you've already had your green surge, and the Claire's suggesting we haven't had ours. We had a wee green surge, maybe a trickle down effect after yours. What advice can you give us in retrospect if we're to have a green surge on May the 8th? And how would we manage a new influx and a significant influx of new members, and how that doesn't change our focus or our strategy, etc. So just some hints on pitfalls to avoid, please.
Well, from my own point of view, I hope that the green surge is slightly delayed, because the morning of May the 8th, I think I'm going to be waiting for however many recounts for Manor and South Tyrone require. So in general, the most important bit of advice that I'm going to give you is make sure that your member sign up on your website has a function for direct debit. And I'm being deadly serious about that, because our Lecky, who's our IT guy in the Scottish Greens, when we sort of got a whiff that there was a manic about it to happen, I think on the 18th, Lecky managed to set up a kind of a page on the website, which meant we could kind of, all of our systems didn't crash, but they did crash for a wee while, because we were having, you know, hundreds of members by the minute, and it was too much for our systems to cope with. But in all seriousness, everyone just signed up, and they've signed up for 1 year, and that was a one-off payment, and we're in a situation now where, come September the 19th this year, we're not sure what our membership is going to be like, and it might not stay at the same level, purely because actually an administrative function that we could have sorted out beforehand. So now, and I am being very persistent with people in my party about this, is that we've got a job to do between now and September the 19th to get everyone onto direct debit. Because actually, and you know from yourself, these basic things actually are what keep your party going. And it's not because people don't want to stay a member, but they just don't ever get round to maybe doing their form again or to paying their membership fee. So that's one golden bit of advice that I would say is make sure if you're going to do anything in the coming months, just make sure that your administrative systems are up and running. And I mean, wider than that, I think that some of it's going to be organic. You know, you kind of have to allow people to go through a bit of a process where it's a bit messy and then they kind of organise themselves. But certainly having kind of local area hubs, so trying to have as much local activity as possible so that you've got organisers at a kind of ward level and local level, because trying to do it at too high a level is too difficult and it can feel isolating for people. So to try and have that local system and structured in place, I think, is really important if you're going to have an influx of people, just so that people know who their go-to people are for certain things. And having a membership welcome process so that people actually know, because there's a lot about being part of a party that you just assume that people know, where actually we've had a lot of new members who've never been part of a party before. They don't really have a clue what's involved or how they can involve themselves or get engaged. And it's fine once they've met some friendly faces and then they've gone along to a meeting and then they get hooked in. But for, you know, we're sort of from a culture of living room meetings where everyone just assumes that everyone knows what's going on, or they'll pass it on over a cup of tea. And obviously when you grow, you can't have those kind of friendship-based networks in place, so you have to have something a bit more structured. So they're the kind of best bits of advice I would give. But happy to be in touch by email or whatever, or Skype on the phone, if people want to ask more things. I'm co-convener of Glasgow branch, which we had 200 members pre-surge, and we now have over 2,000 members post-surge. And we've set up 5 new sub-branches within the city and 3 in the west of Scotland. So we have 8 new sub-branches within our big branch, and we didn't have that before. So there's certainly lots of learning that I would love to pass on so that you don't make the same mistakes that we did. Cheers.
What Zara said is really important, and the thing about direct debits cannot be emphasised enough. GPW had that problem, and the other reason for the green surge is they got that fixed 6 years ago, and membership hasn't kept falling every year. But the only other thing I'd add is that if there's been a mistake or a difficulty with the green surge in England, it's been that all of these, as the kind of question hinted at, all of these new members have joined, and quite reasonably, they're very excited. And they've demanded that they get to campaign in their constituency, and they run, have leaflets, and they run a big campaign. And all of them are going to see that enthusiasm butchered on the altar of first past the post. And what there hasn't been much success in doing, and I don't know how you do it, but I can at least warn you that it's a problem so you can think about it, is channeling all that energy very fast into the target to win strategy. And that is very difficult, because people are obviously going to be excited about campaigning where they are, and they should be, and getting the national vote shares up is important and so on. But there's also a very good reason why you target in an election. You guys could put your vote up hugely all across Northern Ireland next year in the Assembly elections and come back with no Assembly members, and that would be a disaster. And so thinking about that problem, I don't have an answer for you. So that when it comes, you have the answer, I think, is the one other thing I'd add is, targeting is absolutely vital in elections. Channel your energy and you'll climb to great heights.
I'm just going to add in an example. So this has happened, obviously, across Scotland as well. And we're fielding more candidates than we ever have before. And obviously, we have got more membership resource. But we're not organised enough for it to actually be sort of fully functioning for this election. But what happened in Glasgow is we had already decided we were going to field 4 candidates, and that was decided on. And then we took it to AGM, and there was a motion proposed by a member that we stand in all 7 constituencies in Glasgow. And there was most of us, or certainly people that got Target to win, who were arguing at conference against that. And I was one of them, even though I would be a prospective candidate and I'm now standing. But trying to convince new members, actually, that it'd be better not to field more candidates. But they were like, no, but there's more of us now, and we can do more, and we can... was very, very difficult, and we lost that motion at conference, and as a result, we're now fielding 7 candidates. And obviously, I'm pleased about that, and I'm in the mix. But it has added an extra drain in resources, and actually, I think the membership now, when we're showing them the reality of the money we have to raise to make it happen, and the expectation that we need from them to actually to make sure that this campaign doesn't drain us as a branch, has actually, you know, they're now beginning to see the reality of their decision, but unfortunately it's a bit too late. So I think all that, like, definitely that warning is a good one to have. And again, I'm not sure how you get around that, because it's very difficult to get that message out, but certainly having Target to Win as a key training from the very first meeting, in terms of that being something that focuses people's minds, and you let them know that that is a key priority for the party and for the branch, from the word go, so that it's on their minds, I think, is probably a priority for new members.
I'm going to get in really big trouble if we don't wind up now. So can I just ask each member of the panel, perhaps, if there's something they want to say in 10 seconds, just to wind up.
Put on the spot there. Just looking forward to the green surge. And again, I have to say, it's amazing to see such a turnout today. Well done. And thanks to everybody for coming over from England, Scotland, and way down in Dublin.
I think, coming back to what John was saying earlier, you know, that the green surge happened because we talked about economics and we weren't afraid of our ideas. We were willing to talk about, I will say, radical economic transformation, and that's what people want, and they find us because we started really shouting about it.
I think just to say, I mean, I suppose, wish all three parties well in May, and you know, I think some of you can expect wins in May, and some of you will be working towards your own regional elections, but however it goes, I just want to wish everyone the best of luck, and I think it's going to be an exciting, I'll be up late that night anyway, I'm looking forward to it.
I think I would just say to all of the new and older members that are in the room today is to stick with it. It can be very tiresome and difficult being involved in politics, and I was a very sort of naive and enthusiastic activist just a few years ago and believed I could change the world in a day. I've now painfully realised that that is not possible, but I'm still trying. But I think you go through peaks and troughs as an activist, and it can be very difficult to stay actively engaged. So I would just say stick with it and remember to look after each other, because with a surge does come a lot of pressure, and it's important actually to remember of the health and well-being of the people in the party and to make sure that you're providing that support to each other, because it can be difficult, and obviously it's important to celebrate together but also to support each other during the more difficult and pressurised times as well. And Scottish Greens will be there for you. So whenever you need a shoulder to cry on, then come over and we'll buy you a pint.
Thank you very much to all the members of the panel. Claire, who came by taxi. The others who didn't. thanks for coming. Some of you at very short notice. I think it's been really inspiring. It's really good to know that we have the support of our sister parties right across the British Isles. And thank you very much.